Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the Red Journal podcast. My name is Jasmohan Bajaj. I'm a co-editor-in-chief of the Red Journal from Virginia Commonwealth University. And on behalf of myself and my co-editor-in-chief, Dr. Millie Long from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, we're delighted to have Dr. Ryan Stidham here, who not only is one of our associate editors, but is also a leading luminary in the field of artificial intelligence and GI disease. He's currently a professor of medicine in Mayo Clinic, Jacksonville. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks very much, Jess. It's great to talk about this topic.
For our listeners and our readers, the April 2026 issue of the Red Journal is solely based on AI. It has multiple aspects of AI in there and has a delightful editorial by Dr. Stidham, which goes through almost all the articles that are published in there. And we are going to talk a little bit about that as well. So the reasoning behind the AI article, of course, was for us to harness the power and the limitations of this concept that is actually being heavily studied at this stage in GI. So Ryan, what do you think are the current applications of AI that you think are the most important for our readers and listeners to know about, knowing that most of our listeners and readers are practicing gastroenterology?
The two most approachable aspects of AI for GI are really in the computer vision space and automated interpretation of endoscopy. And then the other set of applications are really, at this point, frankly, administrative tools. These are kind of the two buckets or domains of AI-related products and tools that gastroenterologists can get their hands on right now. And in fact, increasingly more and more groups are using them and figuring out where they're helpful and maybe where more work is needed before they become helpful. Today, in the computer vision space, it's really just polyp detection. We have a lot of possibilities, which we can talk about, where we can go with automated interpretation of endoscopy or enhanced interpretation of endoscopy. But today, it's really just the polyp detection that we're all familiar with. And in terms of large language models, the real application right now that's practical is still just the automated dictation assistance and note generation, where systems can record your voice, the patient's voice, record that interaction, and construct not a perfect, but a reasonable document. Those are kind of the two domains now, but there's a lot more coming in the future, and it's not that far away.
Well, thank you. And speaking of the computer-aided diagnosis, we had a few studies in our special issue on this. Would you shed some light on some of the limitations and the positive aspects of this as were published in the three studies in our AI issue?
Really proud of this issue, this AI special edition, because I think it gives a fair and balanced view of where we're at with AI. And in terms of CAD, particularly for polyp detection, I still think that the jury's out in terms of the value. All these papers are showing there's no doubt that artificial intelligence can detect adenomas and detect polyps. But the question is, what's that value? And we're seeing different studies with different viewpoints. We're seeing studies that are showing, yes, you can get an increased polyp detection and increased ADR. And this was a study that was done in a real world practice that was actually done in the Mayo practice, over thousands of endoscopies. They saw all of the different metrics that were being measured on, polyp detection, ADR, et cetera, all were improved and enhanced with AI tools. But then we also have another study that's showing that maybe that yield is not quite there. And in particular, the yield for more significant polyps, those that are larger, greater than 5 millimeters, the types of polyps where we think there's increased meaningful risk of conversion eventually into colorectal cancer, we're not really seeing them that much in terms of the gains of artificial intelligence. So that jury in terms of the value of the current technology is still out. And I think we have two great kind of opposing views, and both are well-done studies. And the last point, many of us were interested in this resect and discard idea, and can AI help us predict the histology of that polyp? So if we can be certain that it's hyperplastic or certain that it's benign, remove it and forget about it, or even don't even remove it at all, potentially. And I think we have a nice study here showing we are not quite there yet. And if the human eye is unable to make that distinction, the machines are not exactly able to do much better than us either. And I think that's an important reality check for practically using AI.
So there are also many other studies that we have accepted in this issue that study things such as video capsule endoscopy, as well as things related to defecatory disorders, and basically trying to find patterns that the human eye cannot really detect, or at least cannot detect in time for us to give a timely advice to the patient. Could you tell our listeners about it a little bit more and see where that field is going?
I think that's a really exciting space where, you know, in contrast to adenoma and polyp detection, where gastroenterologists, you know, we're trained experts and we're already quite good. I mean, we can always get better. The real value is in helping us in particular aspects of management that are more tedious or kind of more arbitrary. So in the capsule endoscopy example, this is something that all of us can read a capsule endoscopy. It's frankly a matter of time. But artificial intelligence, time is not at the same scale as us because it's processing far more quickly than we're able to do so. And so we've got great real-world evidence now that AI-assisted capsule endoscopy is really doing just as good of a job in terms of sensitivity and performance for detecting meaningful lesions, but doing it in a fraction of the time, minutes. So in that case, you're seeing AI computer vision compressing down the capsule endoscopy, really down to kind of the most important clips that a specialist needs to look at. So you've got kind of a human computer collaboration here, which I think is really exciting. And now we've got good evidence for it. But I think the defecatory disorders, you know, we haven't seen an overwhelming amount of AI applications in functional bowel disease. And that's why I think it's really great how balanced this special edition is in terms of all the different parts of gastroenterology. And when we think about things like anorectal manometry, interpretation, and there is such an art to that. And in many cases, people are more comfortable when it's very highly seasoned and experienced clinicians who are making that interpretation. But from the study done by Mike Camarelli and colleagues here, we're seeing that you can actually begin to start to automate that interpretation of that type of data, combine it with other clinical features. And actually, even in a non-specialist practice, AI can help you get closer to a subspecialist in interpretation. And there's still work to be done, but Dr. Camarelli's paper really gives us a glimpse of that kind of future.
So speaking of things that could help us, you had briefly mentioned about AI being one of the ambient AI tools, et cetera. But here there's a lot of things in hepatology in which summarizing records, going through records and talking to patients and defining who has liver disease or not. That is also a very big need of the day, given that the MASLD epidemic, and then we have so many people who basically move around and get like huge sums, huge amounts of data that we are, as doctors are, or clinicians are expected to suddenly transcribe and put in our heads. So this issue also has a few things related to hepatology that might be helpful not only for research, but actually for clinical care. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
I'd say at least once or twice a week when I'm seeing a very complicated inflammatory bowel disease patient and I'm asking them some questions about their history, they just say, well, it's all on my records. Just go ahead and read the 30 years of records here, which I have tried my best to do. But, you know, we need help with this. And in this issue, we're seeing several articles in the hepatology space looking at exactly what you're talking about, using large language models and other artificial intelligence techniques to extract the information that we need from those records that is relevant to a subspecialty need or the exact information that we want. This is something that's been promised by AI, but has yet to really be delivered commercially or by industry yet. But we can tell that we're very, very close. And in this issue, we have at least two, I think we have three different examples of where artificial intelligence is correctly summarizing prior documentation in terms of making the right diagnosis, in terms of situation where diagnostic codes aren't available, and you need to kind of infer a diagnosis, and also collecting information about a patient that's relevant to a specialty practice. So it's almost as if you have a really high functioning intern or resident doing a chart review for you, but allow the machine to do it at scale instantaneously 24 hours a day. And so I think this will really help not only with practice and in our practical day-to-day, being able to have these AI and LLM tools summarize a patient's history with just the information. That alone is a great time saver, but it also moves us towards automated care, which is if the machines are able to extract this meaningful information, we can start building models or care pathways that are explainable and understandable, but can be executed on automatically by the machine.
Right. And I think, of course, that one big part of this is also explaining it to the patients and actually having the patient interface with AI. And I think there are some things here which guide the patient through colonoscopy based on stool images and diet guidance for celiac disease, which is extraordinarily important. Think about people who are stuck in the middle of the night. Is my prep good enough for tomorrow's endoscopy? Or is this, do I need to call the people versus, you know, does this specific food item have gluten or had gluten or something like that. This is the use of AI for these things and similar might be important. Could you shed some light on what the journal actually has with this for this, in this special issue?
We're seeing both of those examples that you mentioned. And those examples, the AI is being used as a constant on 24/7 companion for a patient and doing a pretty good job, both in the practical problem of coaching a patient through a bowel preparation. In the past, you know, we would provide the best instructions possible. If it's during daylight hours, you know, we may have staff available to kind of field those telephone calls to kind of help patients through it. But we still can't be there all the time. Most patients are prepping in the middle of the night. And we see a great example in this, in the special issue, that AI tools can do a pretty good job and not just listen to the patient in terms of like a chatbot, but have really natural language responses, conversational responses. And in the paper, in the manuscript that's in this edition, they're actually also using images from the patient as well, images of how their prep is going to help coach them on what they should do or not do. And that's really kind of a comprehensive, multimodal, very sophisticated AI tool, but compressed down to something that is approachable to a patient. And in the same vein, you know, with dietary guidance, being able to work with nutritionists and dietitians is a great resource. And we're working with those disciplines more and more throughout gastroenterology. But, you know, when you're at a restaurant or you're at the grocery store, what do? And in the past, you know, you would have to pull up some document and divine it. But with these AI tools and LLM-based tools, you're really getting very practical assistance for the patient. I think this is helping in kind of every domain, whether it's to help with mast cell or celiac disease, as we see in this issue, or alternatively, IBD coaching or even no nutritional optimization. And so the patient-facing aspect of AI is a critical one and deserves a lot of attention. And when we're seeing some manuscripts,
yeah, and interestingly, there was also a multi-center survey that was published as well, in which patients were directly asked their concerns. And that is also in this. Do you want to talk about this a little bit?
The jury is still out, at least amongst patients. And that's what you'll see in this survey. And they kind of unequivocally are sharing that they have interest in AI in terms of the fact that it can help them get things done in a more timely fashion. Like the idea of access, particularly for administrative things like medication refills and making appointments, that is attractive to patients. But we're also seeing feedback through this survey that patients have, they don't want the increased access from AI to replace the access to the clinicians working with them. They also have concerns about cost. When we hear about how much, frankly, money and resources are involved in making this AI go, patients are actually pretty keen and they're thinking, well, someone's got to pay for this. Is this going to be me paying for it? And so I think, and a lot of these questions kind of, we don't have answers to because we've never done this before. So we're all figuring it out together, but keeping the patient's interest front and center is critical.
And in this, as part of this, we also have a multi-stakeholder consortium that convened by the ACG, which you and I were part of, amongst many others, that is also there as part of this issue, so that a lot of these things from an industry standpoint, from a patient care standpoint, from a forward-thinking standpoint, are all listed there. And many of the things that we are talking about, that we're worried about, are in there as a potential framework for the future. Now, interesting questions you mentioned in your editorial, that around, yeah, as little as 2 years ago, the AI failed one of our exams, whereas now it unfortunately for us did as well and passed. So for the fellows and trainees living in the AI era, how do they prepare both from an academic standpoint and from the clinical practice standpoint? Should we be treating AI as a competition or something that we actually can harness to help us?
Without sugarcoating it, the reality that we clearly have to face is that knowledge by itself, factual knowledge, doesn't have the value that it's had in the past. But what increasingly has value is creativity, inspiration, problem solving. These are features that the AI is not doing. And so the way that we practice, particularly for trainees and fellows, the way that we practice is no longer going to be about the deep memorization and knowledge repository, which has been the case for a while. It's more going to be about creative problem solving and understanding edge cases and understanding the nuances that, you know, we're already finding today that the machines are not understanding. So the future actually for gastroenterology is one more of creativity and problem solving, where hopefully a lot of the, frankly, drudgery of the profession for, you know, across medicine is increasingly being replaced by AI. The thing that the fellows and junior faculty are going to have to keep in mind with AI, though, is this concept of de-skilling. In areas where AI is competent, such as polyp detection, we're increasingly seeing some evidence that a lot of use of polyp detection tools may actually reduce your performance because you become somewhat accustomed or maybe even dependent on it. So the added responsibility that we'll have is to be very aware of that potential dependency and to find new ways in our education to keep our mind sharp.
In addition to all of this, while I know junior faculties and even us, we are tempted to often put questions into AI and assume that everything that comes out is gospel, which obviously is not true. There could be some hallucinations as well when it comes to that. And there's a temptation to shortcut all of these things by putting them into those things. So we also maybe need to figure out how we can actually ensure that people use AI as not as a replacement for thinking. What do you think?
We're learning how to do this right now. And I think that we're all kind of going through the experimental trials of using it, not using it, figuring out where it works and where it doesn't work, to exactly to your point. There is an increasing awareness of how when using AI, particularly large language models for questions, it's very useful when you already kind of know the answer. It is less reliable when you're asking questions that are totally outside of your domain. So if I'm asking a question about financial planning, everything looks wonderful and seems great to me. But when I show it to a professional, they can point out all the nuances. I think that the same is true in for hepatology or gastroenterology, where you are competent to be able to pick out the weaknesses or misunderstandings of the AI, but also use the different things that it's contributing. So I think that symbiosis is going to continue. But we shouldn't be afraid of it. I think we should all just dive in and see and be honest about where it's working and where it's not.
And I have a healthy dose of skepticism if things appear too good to be true, and like we do with every single thing. Last but not the least is there's a big risk or emerging risk of medical legal challenges with AI. And I think there is, apart from many things, not only the consensus, but a special review also tackles that. Would you want to remind our readers and listeners a little bit about the medical legal aspects of AI?
It is unclear when AI is making a prediction or contributing to care, who exactly is responsible for that recommendation or even influencing a decision that's at the moment, everything still falls on the clinician. But increasingly over time, as we have more and more decision supports tools that get closer and closer to the final decision, care decision being made for an individual patient, we have to rethink, responsibility. And there's movements for shared risk models where for highly integrated AI, the technology vendors need to take on some of that risk. There's huge resistance against that because it's all up to the clinicians, right? But if we're going to be using these AI systems and in some ways potentially like obliged to use these systems, then there's going to have to be some shared risk. So the medical legal issues are who's responsible for the final decision, who pays, also the ethics of privacy, right? Increasingly, these large electronic medical records are using patient information to develop models. I think many patients are fine with that if it helps care, but some may not be. And so there's a question of, well, do we need to get consent from everyone to use these things? Maybe they're an AI naysayer and they don't want to have any part of it. How do we handle that kind of scenario? So it's really like a brave new world. I do think it's all going to be positive, but we're going to have to stumble around for a while and learn some lessons, I'm sure, along the way.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stidham. This has been a very enlightening discussion. This is indeed a brave new world, and we are lucky to have you to guide us through it. And for our listeners and readers, please take a look at the April 2026 AI issue on the Red Journal, and thank you again for tuning in.